Begin Holonet transmission. Welcome to the Wealthy Wampa, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. Imperials, Rebels, and Bounty Hunters are all welcome, but please check your blaster pistols and lightsabers at the door, and remember, droids are prohibited. Now, have a seat at the Sabacc table in the corner. Your order is coming right up.
Greetings out there, ladies and gentlemen of the galaxy. This is the Wealthy Wampa, a Star Wars Destiny podcast. I am TK421.
And I am Oddball the Mon Cow.
No, with me is Oddball, the lazy rebel scum. If you haven't listened to our introductory episode, I suggest you do. It's right there in the podcast feed, and that should answer a great many questions if you're coming into this cold. We're here to talk to you, though, about our favorite hexahedral heroes and six-sided Sith, and we're doing it from this dusty table in the corner of Nar Shaddaa's most adequate cantina, the Wealthy Wampa.
See, you say that adequate cantina thing like it's bad. I actually kind of enjoy it here.
I mean, the food's not going to kill us, and nobody really asks questions, which is probably why your rebel backside and this Imperial Stormtrooper can, you know, meet here and nobody asks questions, right?
Yeah, I mean, in any other establishment, you'd see a hero of the Republic like myself hanging out with a storm blooper such as yourself, and people would really wonder, but here we can do what we want.
A hero of the Republic, yeah, so that, like, one time you held a hydro spanner and looked at an engine, that made the difference, huh?
That actually took a lot more work than it looked like, so everybody saw what I was doing, and they knew that I saved the day.
By looking, yeah, okay. Regardless, we are here to talk about Star Wars Destiny. And let's start with talking about a little bit of news from around the Holonet. The first thing I wanted to point out, we know that there have been some new set spoilers that have come out. You've seen them, I've seen them. We're not going to dig into those. That's another topic for another time, though I will say that despite his non-Imperial roots, I am excited for Chirrut Imwe to be there. I really enjoy his personality and respect him as a character, even if he's on the opposite side of me. Very, very cool character, and I hope what comes with him ends up working, because I would very much like to give that a try. So spoilers are trickling out, but today, Oddball, we have confirmation that everything is at the printer. Fantasy Flight Games updated their product page, and this was finally tagged on there as at the printer.
Yeah, and that is really fantastic news. I've seen some rumors kind of floating around that we'd be seeing the first booster packs and everything in April. So the wait begins again.
Yep, it sure does. And that's fine with me. This is all about a little bit of anticipation. You get a set, you play with a set, and the new stuff starts to trickle out. So you kind of tickles your acquisition disorder there. And That's just how these games work. That's how they have always worked, and that's okay as long as it's a fun game. And luckily, this one is.
Yes, it's very fun, and, well, again, April can't get here soon enough.
Sure. Something else that can't get here soon enough would be August, because that would be Nationals, U.S. Nationals, at the Northern Virginia Open, the Nova Open. Now, I don't know where the U.S. is as we sit here on Nar Shaddaa, but apparently it's a good thing. You can register now. That happened, I believe, on February 1st. The tournament is $35. That starts Thursday at 11 a.m., and then the top 16 happens the next day. I saw there was also a free-for-all tournament on Sunday, and that was going to cost $20 to be a part of that, and you can check out novaopen.com for the details. And I suggest you do look at that. Initial scheduling showed a Friday-Saturday schedule for Star Wars Destiny. Luckily, I checked before I asked for the days off to make it to this, and it is now Thursday-Friday. So if you show up Friday hoping to play in the Swiss part of the tournament, you would be disappointed unless they change their schedule again.
Right, and for big events like this, of course, you're always wanting to check periodically to make sure there are no changes or anything, but I'm pretty excited for this, actually.
I am too. Normally, Fantasy Flight Games has the store championships leading into regionals, leading into nationals, leading into worlds. And that's all well and good. This year, because the game has come out kind of right in the middle of things, they're opening nationals to everybody. And I know one of the top prize is round-trip airfare to play at Worlds. And there, if you're a fan of the Star Wars games, there are plenty of other Star Wars events that you can partake of there. But I'm going for Destiny because that is the best part of our universe.
Yeah, what happened before with Fantasy Flight Games is they had all of their games together all at once. So when they had the world title, world championships, they had every game, not just the Star Wars games, but Game of Thrones and Netrunner and everything else. Now, I think they've pretty much split everything off so that we've got the Star Wars games and then the rest of everything else.
The Star Wars games have become so big that they pretty much required it. The other games have varying populations. I know Netrunner, probably the biggest one, though, with the relaunch of Game of Thrones, that may change a little bit. But as far as the Star Wars games go, my goodness, they're just so big. X-Wing on its own. I know, I don't know why they named it after that terrible rebel snub fighter. TIE Fighters are clearly superior. Superior, as the TIE Fighter Flight Simulator game was far superior to the X-Wing game. Regardless of that, the X-Wing miniatures game is just gangbusters for that company. It's selling, it's sold like crazy. We heard about this on a recent episode of The Dice Tower with Tom Vassell, who detailed the fact that X-Wing has sold so much that it is just for a lot of stores, it is blowing away everything except for Magic the Gathering, which is crazy. Now, I don't know if that's tailed off, but geez, I look at what's in our local establishment where you can purchase these games, and I see just a wall full of little ship miniatures, all for X-Wing. It's crazy to me.
Right, and I can attest to the popularity of it. Here in my little sector of the galaxy, there is a very large population of X-Wing players. And even though I think Destiny is going to catch up eventually or get close, X-Wing is an extremely popular game. Even the other games, Imperial Assault and Armada, just can't touch it.
Well, X-Wing was before all of them, so we'll see. X-Wing was after, of course, the Star Wars card game, which has a following, though it's certainly somewhat muted. A lot more excitement on that front is with Destiny, and I'll be curious to see how much longer the living card game continues with Destiny kind of running up behind it. All right, so that's all we wanted to talk about with news items for today. I think it's just going to be light here and there, and we'll get the odd spoiler or the update about the new set or reprints or other things like that, maybe some tournaments here and there, but I suspect it's going to be light the next little while, and it's going to be more about the games.
Yeah, and that's going to be very nice to go ahead and dive and dig into this current set, into Awakenings, a bit more before we start looking really seriously at the new set.
I agree. Okay, let's move on then to Are These the Cards You're Looking For? This is the segment where we look at a deck and we do a simulated 5-card draw from it, talk about what we might mulligan, what we might not. We are looking today at a deck that is Elite Luke Skywalker and regular Admiral Akbar. So a prototypical Rebel Scum deck here. And speaking of Rebel Scum, Oddball, I believe you piloted this just hours before we record, in fact.
I did. I took this deck to an event, and while I didn't exactly do super great with it this time, it is a pretty good deck. It's got some, obviously some strengths to it. What you're going to want to do, just to kind of set the stage here, is you're going to want to get Luke out, of course, and activate him to deal some damage, and then you're going to want to use a card called Leadership to activate Luke again to be able to ready him and exhaust Akbar. But then you'll be able to activate Luke, roll out his dice again, and potentially you can, if you get the best type of roll, score 12 damage from Luke's melee dice alone. And that's without any sort of upgrades. This deck's going to have lightsabers in it and a few other tricks, force throws. Of course, you will be able to see the deck list on the post for this podcast.
Yeah, we'll put that in the show notes. And as always, if your podcatcher does not allow you to click on the link in the show notes, it's also going to be on our website, thewealthywampa.com. Okay, so yeah, I mean, just looking over this, it's pretty similar to some of the things that I have seen. I noticed there's not a couple of the, I don't see Riposte, for example.
Yeah, with this team, I wanted to go ahead and focus on a bit of dice mitigation, and also in dealing the damage directly from Luke and from the add-ons there. Riposte, it's good. It's good in some situations, but shields are so important to keep Luke or Akbar alive long enough to actually pull off the main trick, which is, once again, using leadership.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see also there's a lot of other shield providers in there with Dug In and Defensive Stance, and then Field Medic to go ahead and try to heal some damage if needed. Things that are going to keep them both around as long as possible.
All right, so yeah, that is a little bit of a different flavor than what I have seen from this before. I actually played against an Eluke Akbar deck at a recent tournament. And I actually have a write-up about that tournament coming soon, probably in the next couple of days after I record this. So it may already be up by the time this show is posted. So this is a little bit of a different flavor here. It looks like you're going for some more just straight-up damage where they were trying to do some tricks with shields and so forth. All right, then. So our five-card draw here, it looks like we have Force Throw, which is the three-cost upgrade. You're looking at that mostly for the special. It has two special faces. You remove a die to deal character damage equal to the value showing on that die. Specials and blanks count as zero. That's a pretty good card. Return of the Jedi, which is an event that costs one. You get to bring a blue event from your discard pile back to your hand. And in fact, I saw that used to great effect with the Riposte when I played against it. We also have Field Medic, which you talked about. That's simple, one cost, remove two damage. We have Use the Force, which is you spot a blue character to turn a die to any side. That's an event. It costs one. And finally, Leadership, which you talked about as a critical card in this deck. That's a neutral, uncommon card. It's red. Costs just one. You exhaust one of your unique red characters in order to ready another character. So as you were saying, you would exhaust Admiral Akbar so that you can activate Luke and roll all of his dice again. Okay, so those are five cards. Force Throw, Return of the Jedi, Field Medic, Use the Force, and Leadership. Oddball, are these the cards you're looking for?
Not totally. Taking a look here, let's just kind of go down the list here. Force Throw is a fantastic card, and I'm probably going to hang on to that. Even though it costs three, I want to get that card onto Luke as soon as possible. Unlike you Imperial bad guys there, you imps, we don't have the ability to throw a blue-only upgrade onto a non-blue character. Of course, you can do that with Sith Holocron, but there's no way Akbar is going to be getting Force Throw. So I want to make sure to put that on Luke as soon as I can. Return of the Jedi is a great card. The thing is early in the game, I'm probably not going to have much to boomerang back from my discard pile into my hand. So I'm probably going to go ahead and set that one back. Field Medic's the same thing. Hopefully, early in the game, I'm not going to need to do a lot of healing. Hopefully, that's going to come up a little bit later. So that's another one that I would probably put back in to try to get something better. Use the Force is always good for mitigation to try to keep some of that early damage, especially against very aggressive decks, from hitting me. So I'm going to hang on to that. Now, so we're kind of two in, two out so far. Leadership is the tricky one. It's going to depend what I'm setting down against. If I'm setting down against a mill team, a team that's going to make me start discarding things from my deck and my hand, I would probably hang on to it. On the other hand, you kind of want leadership a little bit later, a couple of turns later anyway, whenever Luke has a few upgrades on him for more damage. So it's hard to say if I'd throw it away or not. In this hypothetical instance, without knowing what team I'm setting down against, I'm probably going to hang on to it since the deck is built around it. And again, if I get the best rolls possible, that's still going to be 12 damage with no upgrades on them. So, yeah, I'd throw back three, throw back two. I'd throw back the Return of the Jedi and Field Medic and keep Force Throw, Use the Force, and Leadership.
Interesting. You know, I can see keeping Force Throw. I can see not. I think Use the Force is an obvious one just because early on, especially, I'm probably more likely to take that if I'm going against a pretty aggressive deck, right? Because that can be, say, if I'm going against a red-yellow villains, taking away that one die that's showing damage, like the other, while it just has like the other dice are the plus faces, but that one die is the only way they're going to be able to resolve it, is a pretty important thing early on and is critical to help you stabilize. So I think that's a pretty good thing to hold on to. Force Throw would be great if I knew, I don't know, two resources starting out makes me worry. A lot of the upgrades in here cost more than two. Of course, Force Throw is three. Really, the only ones that cost two are what? The Force Training and Raised Staff. Everything else is three or more. I probably want to dig. I want to hope I get a it binds all things, right? I feel like that would be a pretty important card to have here, especially if using Leadership with Luke revolves around making sure you have some dice on Luke to make it more worthwhile.
Right. Actually, the kind of opening that I want to see is I want to see it binds all things, and I want to see Force Training. So my first turn would be throwing down it binds all things, and then using it on my next turn to go ahead and play Force Training on Luke.
Mm-hmm.
That's ideal.
I could actually see pitching four, keeping the defensive card, depending on what I'm sitting down against. If I'm sitting down against something that is also looking to, for the game to go maybe just a little bit longer than, say, Jango Viers would, or Jango Trooper Trooper or whatever, I might pitch everything and just dig hard for a different die card, and it binds all things. I could see getting rid of it all.
So either way, these were not the cards that you're looking for?
I think that's safe to say. So today, for our first full episode, one thing that we wanted to talk about were some things, I guess you could say things we wish we knew when we started Destiny, or maybe you could reframe this as some of the heuristics that are proving their mettle in the early going here. Those are decisions, heuristics, that are pretty good 80% of the time, and that is pretty good to help you try to get to better core gameplay so we can expand from there. And we're each going to have a few different points here, and we'll go through. Since product is making its way out through new parts of the galaxy, we think that it's a good time to talk about all of the things that new players are going to encounter and get some ideas out there. So one thing I do want to start with, if you're brand new to collectible card games in general, we've added a new player lexicon to the website, and that's going to go through some general CCG terms like aggro or aggressive, which we're just referring to aggressive decks there, or control, mill, other things that you'll hear us talk about a lot. But then also we'll put in some of the Destiny-specific terms as well. And if you give that a look, it'll help get you on the same page, because you're going to hear that language is very common to what we and others will say. And the better you know that vernacular, the more you're going to follow conversations and hopefully get a little bit of enrichment from them. So if you're brand new, give that a look. I think it's important to have those resources there, and it's important for the community to help provide people with them.
Even if you're not new to CCGs in general, if maybe you're just new to Star Wars Destiny, it still is a good idea to go ahead and refresh yourself on what some of these are. It's going to make it a lot easier if we're all kind of speaking the same language and talking about the same things and knowing what we're talking about, more or less.
Right, or at least using the same term. Like, if you speak Huttese, you should still at least know what we're talking about.
Right, but either way, I've got a bad feeling about this.
Speaking of the bad, why don't you start us off then, Oddball?
Yeah, and this is going to be one that, after my experience just a few hours ago, I really wanted to kind of talk about. Bad rolls and bad beats are going to happen. And what I mean by that is, this is a dice game, obviously. So sometimes you are going to have the perfect plan in mind, and everything is so perfect if only you don't happen to roll this combination of blanks and disrupts and maybe even a special that's completely useless at that point in the game. And sure enough, when you roll, that's what you're going to get. So try not to go on tilt. Try not to get too upset about it. These things do happen.
They sure do. And the nice thing is that every single card in here, and this has been mentioned a lot, and I know it's, I think I mentioned it in the comments on our website. And by the way, please interact that way. We want to talk with you. Or at least type with you. Every card essentially has on it an invisible text that says, discard this to reroll your dice. So things never get that bad that they can't change, and you have some mitigation options built into the game.
Right, and one of the nice things about Destiny, one of the things I enjoy the most, is actually learning how to use what you get. So sure, you didn't get the 3 damage and the 3 damage on Luke, but you got a couple of other sides, maybe a shield and a resource, and you can take plan B and go ahead and use the sides you did get and make something good happen. Thinking on the fly, using what you get, those are some things that make this game really fun. The bad rolls can sometimes get a little frustrating, but again, it's all part of the game.
It sure is. And you know, depending on what you're running, there are some things that can also help you mitigate some of those bad rolls. Things that let you change a dice to any side, or cards like Unpredictable that let you reroll a die, or maybe force your opponent to reroll a die. Or there's things like Fight Dirty, where you just remove your dice and then you get to deal damage equal to the number of dice that you removed. If you roll something really terrible, a bunch of blanks and an unusable special and something else that just doesn't work for you, play Fight Dirty and get some damage out of it. There are a lot of options out there, and being cognizant of that is good. You got to keep perspective.
Right. Whenever you're putting your deck together, make sure that you're building for the bad rolls. Whenever I'm building a deck, I like to think that, hey, I may have this force throw out there, but I'm never going to hit the special side. So what do I do to work with this die when it's setting on a blank or when it's setting on one of the other sides? And that's maybe a good way to think about it. That way, whenever you do hit the side that you want, hey, it's a bonus.
Yeah, it comes back to thinking about not the best case scenario, but the average case scenario. It's easy to look at a card with just a bonker special and say, well, this is going to be amazing. Yeah, it might be if you roll that, but the other faces had better be pretty good. Otherwise, you're just kind of taking a pie in the sky shot. Now, maybe that's okay if it's one upgrade among many on your characters and you're going to get to roll a lot of other dice, or you're running a lot of focus and you can switch it to that side, but that's not going to happen all the time. So keeping in mind that there are a variety of faces that dice can land on and there are a variety of cards that you can draw is pretty important when you put your deck together. Even if you're net decking to an extent, which I put no stigma upon, I think it helps people learn the game as long as you're not just blindly copying but actually trying to learn it. That's fine. But when you're going to put little tweaks on it, because stuff where you play is going to be different than stuff where whoever made the deck plays. And you got to think about those little things. I think that's a good point by you. Something I wish I had put a little more thought into when I started was resource management. I think it feels a little difficult to grapple with considering you only get 2 a turn. When I first opened some packs, I got Crime Lord and I thought, this is really cool. And then I looked at all of the costs associated with Crime Lord and I said, how is anybody ever going to afford this? I've had games where I felt very resource rich and games where I felt very resource poor, though they weren't necessarily games where I cared a ton about having resources one way or the other. Now, a lot of other decks do need those resources, so having supports in there like It Binds All Things that's a pretty important thing to think about. Look at the costs of the cards that you think are going to be vital, and how are you going to pay for it? Because there aren't too many dice that have, you know, resource faces aplenty on them. So you have to have some ideas for how you're going to acquire those resources.
Right, and also whenever you're first starting out, and even as you've been playing for a little bit, it takes a little bit of time to get used to the economy in this game. If you look at the cost of a 2-cost card, for example, 2 cost doesn't seem like a lot in the terms of, well, it's just the number 2. But when you consider that you just get 2 resources a turn, that is your entire allowance for the turn, at least your natural allowance if you haven't established some other way to make that money. So it does take a little bit of time to get used to that different kind of way about thinking about the numbers.
Yeah, and there are cards in there that allow you to do it. I already mentioned it binds all things. Another example is a red card. I'm just thinking of this off the top of my head now, actually. The name eludes me, but it allows you to, when you resolve your a resource die, you get to like basically add 1 to its value, which is not bad at all. So there are things in there that can help with that. So be aware of the resources that you're asking for yourself. If you're loading up with a whole bunch of, you know, guns, most of which cost just 2, especially in red-yellow villains decks, okay, you probably don't need to think a whole lot about resource management. But if you're talking about a Luke Akbar deck like we spoke of in Are These the Cards You're Looking For? And that's, of course, why It Binds All Things was in that deck. A lot of those upgrades cost 3, one of them cost 4. So it takes an awareness of where you are, and you got to be able to pay for it. You can't just put a bunch of cards in your deck that seem good if you can't pay for them.
One of the best teams making the rounds right now and having a lot of success at different events is a team with an Elite Malateek, with a 1-die Jango Fett, and of course a 1-die Stormtrooper. One really great thing about this team is I believe there are no upgrades or cards that cost more than 2 in the entire deck. So that team doesn't need to gain a lot of resources because it's not really going to be spending a lot of them. And it shows whenever you play that team or play against it, it makes a big difference.
It does. We talked a little bit about it in the introductory episode when we went through Jango Veers. It's a very similar deck. It's running a lot of those holdout blasters, the Imperial Blaster Rifle, a lot of those 1 and 2 cost weapons. And a lot of those also have redeploy on them, which, you know, ups the efficiency all the more, especially where early in the game you can say, oh, well, I'll put I have this redeploy stuff, I'll put it on the character that my opponents may be hitting a little harder, because if they die, I still get more value out of that card.
TK, if I may ask a question here. As a Stormtrooper, what do you know about efficiency and accuracy and firearms and laser guns? What can you possibly know about that?
Hey, if you have seen our real work, you would know that only Imperial Stormtroopers are so precise.
I wish Obi-Wan had never said that.
Look, what do you know? I mean, reputationally, what? Are you listening to Han and Luke? Oh, well, there were hundreds of them and they couldn't shoot us off the Death Star. The Death Star was an inside job.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Rumor has it that Vader wanted them to get away, Lord Vader, in his wisdom, wanted them to get away so that he could find the base and destroy him. It just, you know, went bad.
Uh-huh. Now, was it part of the plan that they knocked you out and took your uniform?
Okay, helping the scanning crew is not in my job description. They said, hey, can you help us down there? I thought it was the scanning crew. I don't know. I don't talk to those guys. I don't know what they sound like. Hey, give us a hand. You know what? Sure, because I'm going to be a good Imperial soldier, and maybe they'll put in a combination. Hey, that guy helped us out, and he didn't have to. Next thing I know, I wake up naked on the Millennium Falcon. It's not my fault.
Yeah, that never would have happened to me. The first time somebody asked for help, I just would have pretended I didn't hear them, and then I would have snuck off for a nap.
Yeah, that's the hero of the rebellion.
Yes, sir. Let's go ahead and talk about the next thing here.
Yeah,
the next point that we want to make. And that's actually interplay with damage types. And what I mean by that is range damage, melee damage, and special damage. When you're putting together your team, you want to make sure that there is some harmony between those types. So if you've got a character that has all range damage, and then you put another character with all melee damage, keep in mind that while that can be nice in some situations, it is going to slow your team down considerably because you're not going to be able to resolve those damage types together.
That's absolutely true. Though, I played against a General Grievous Jango Fett team, and that was the one that beat me. It was a very close game played by somebody who I've played in other games before, and I know him well, and he's a very competent, skilled player. Knows his stuff, makes good decisions, and it was surprisingly more efficient than I thought it would be. I mean, now that said, I know I had some poor rolls in there, but that's just going to happen. As you said, this is a dice game. That's going to happen. But it worked a little better than I thought. Conventional wisdom, though, is yes, don't split the damage types.
Well, here in our local scene right now, we're very fortunate. We have a lot of very good players, and we've got a lot of people that have picked this game up very quickly and understand it and are working with the ins and outs of it. At first, we saw a lot of range, and I think that's pretty common across everybody's local scenes, especially with the Django Veers and other types of decks like that. But now what I'm starting to notice is there is a lot more focus on melee and a lot of focus on building against ranged. And that's causing those ranged teams to start moving towards the melee, like you said, to start including it. Of course, Django himself has the two ranged sides and the one melee side. And I think that's partially why he's costed the way that he is, because of his fantastic ability. He's still only 16 points for two dice, because he's got that split damage type on his own die. The point is that you just need to be careful whenever you're putting together a team. If I want to just resolve a whole lot of damage in just one turn, I want it obviously to all be the same type of damage, all ranged or all melee. And whenever you start adding the upgrades on there that have the pluses, you want to make sure that those pluses are going to match things that you actually have on your team. You can have a jetpack, for example, on a melee team, and the jetpack has the modifiers for range damage, but your melee team may not have any actual range damage to apply that to. So it's important to make sure that everything matches up.
It is. And I think Django having the one melee face is why people are trying him with General Grievous, because I've certainly heard of others doing it, not just the opponent that I spoke of. But yeah, conventional wisdom is don't split them up. If you're going to do it, have a plan for how you're going to do it. You better at least have some all-ins in your deck, if absolutely nothing else. That's just a pretty good card in general. One other thing that I had to think differently of pretty quickly was the way that card advantage and, by extension, I suppose dice advantage works in this game. It's pretty different from other collectible card games. Other games, everything is cards. It's all cards. So if I do something, if I play one card that forces you to, you know, remove two of your cards, then great. We call that a two for one. That's awesome. And I actually have an article about this very topic on the website right now, so you can check it out. But this game doesn't work exactly that way. A lot of other games have, I won't say infinite resources, but recharging resources. You know that your mana crystals are going to come back, that your lands are going to untap, that your energy is still there, whatever. In this game, our resources, all we're guaranteed is two per turn. And then we also have the cards in our hand, in addition to those resource tokens. We also have the dice that we have down. We also have the actions themselves, and we have the life points on our people. And by extension, I suppose also then you could put the shields in there. And these all are not made equal. Even a single die, it's not just a die, it's also some percentage of the action that rolled it and different things like that. So a card like Negotiate, which on the face gives you a two-for-one trade, right? One of your dice for two of theirs, doesn't necessarily equal out because it's costing you a card and a die and a resource and an action, really, plus the percentage of the action that the die that you're removing represents for your opponent to get rid of two dice of their choice. So on the face, that looks good, but when you really look at what it costs you, it's just not the same. In another game, that would be fantastic. One card to get rid of two is awesome. But in this case, it's one card and a die and some other stuff to get rid of two dice that that are going to probably be your opponent's two least important dice. So you have to think about this very differently.
Right, and it's not just all of the things you listed. It's also a spot in your deck. You've only got two of that, potentially two of that copy of that card, maybe just one. And it is 1/30th of your deck right there. So once you play that card, in most instances, you're not getting it back. Unless you built in a way to do so. But most times, that's it. You play it, and it's gone. So you might have one more shot with that card. You might not. So it's yet more that you have to think about. Is it going to be worth it on this particular instance to factor in all those things? Do I want to go ahead and play this now, or do I save it for something later? It's not as clear-cut as other games, just like you said. And that's something else I love about it.
I agree. And that card in particular is one I have seen some praise for. I appreciated there was a comment or two left on that article where someone was pretty much agreeing with that premise. I think that is probably one of the more overrated cards. And I think that's only because people are taking sort of heuristics, right? The general, this is good because it's good 80% of the time from other games and applying it to this. And a lot of them are going to work, but a lot of them aren't because, of course, it's a distinct game. That's going to change with time as we all increase our knowledge of Destiny.
And on the flip side of the credit there, you're going to see a lot of cards that are really undervalued right now are really going to come into their own even before the new set releases.
I absolutely agree. It all comes down to better game knowledge, more students of the game, and we hope certainly that podcasts like ours and other fantastic shows and websites with articles and YouTube channels and so forth that are out there are going to be able to help influence players, guide them along, make them think about things. We might not have all the answers, but we can at least help get ourselves and everybody else thinking about things in order to be better at the game.
Kind of a little bit of a tangent here. Have you ever seen a new game come out that has had a community grow up so quickly around it? I don't know that I have seen this level of participation from people creating content, commenting on posts on things, doing articles, all sorts of things. It's pretty amazing.
I have to agree with that. You know, having been involved with some other games, I mean, certainly I've been a part of community developing, and there were some good efforts there, but the amount of content creators that have come out with this, and not just that, but I would say fairly good quality ones, and I hope that the listeners will feel that we can be a part of that pantheon, because there are some great people out there, is pretty astounding. I think that's because it takes on, it's the subject matter that it is, and it's a company with a fairly good reputation for putting out quality.
Right, and then the game itself, of course.
Is very good. Yeah.
Yeah, even when you go 1 and 2 at a store event, it still got
a little
bit.
Well, to be fair, what were you calling it? Roll casually?
Yeah, it was a roll casual event, and I did. I rolled fairly casually. One other thing I wanted to talk about, going back to our topic at hand here, and this is going to seem so obvious to most people, but it's going to be this. It's the importance of shields by extension, the anti-shield stuff that you put into your deck. Whenever you look at shields, you really think, oh, you can only have 3 of them, and really they just absorb a point of damage most times, and but really, shields are extremely important, especially for the hero side, but for both sides.
They really are. It's essentially extra life points. I mean, there are only so many ways that you can restore life to your characters, and I would say villain probably has a dearth of them. They can't use field medic. They can't use second chance. But shields are pretty well open to all, and it's extra hit points. I mean, there are things that are unblockable that can get around them, or there are things that maybe punish you for using shields to take damage rather than just taking it right to the face. But in general, it's extra hit points. It's not a bad thing if that one die comes up shield. Could it be more damage? Yeah, it could be, but it's also adding a hit point to you. And your opponent has to work harder, even if they have things in their deck, like, for example, Backup Muscle, that just puts a damage directly onto a character, bypassing shields, or lightsabers that do unblockable damage. Even if those sorts of things are there, now they have to work harder to do it. It's less straightforward.
Right. Even Kylo's wacky lightsaber, the one that almost punishes you for having shields with its special, it's not so scary that you're going to forego using shields.
There's no reason to forego using shields.
There's absolutely zero reason to do that. Shields are extremely important. Like I said, it seems so obvious after just a game or two of Destiny, but truly, it is important to have shields everywhere.
It is, and conversely, if I may steal your next point, it's also that important to have anti-shield tech with you. For example, one of my favorite yellow villain cards, On the Hunt. I mean, that card can be useful. I feel that it's one of those cards, you said in the introductory episode, if you're running yellow villains, you want to have Backup Muscle. I would also say if you are running yellow villains, you want to have On the Hunt. The special is incredibly useful. There's not really a bad face on it, right? It's not going to do a ton of like damage or anything like that, but it contributes to range, it contributes to melee, it can force a discard, but then it's special. Two faces, remove all shields from a character. And then you can also spend one resource to remove one of its character or upgrade dice. That is insanely useful, and it only costs one to put down. So it can contribute to just about any strategy. And let's be honest, if your opponent is stacking shields, those special faces may as well be damage faces because they're taking away the shields. And they'll just as effectively remove one as they will three.
Right. I mean, the only downside potentially to that card is once you put it on one of your characters, that character may become a target. That is really the only downside, and that's a pretty esoteric one. It's not really something that you need to be that concerned about.
It's not really, no. I mean, anything that you start to load up with upgrades is going to be a deterrent, but you can use that to your advantage, and perhaps that's another... This is not a point that I included here, but perhaps that's another point that we should mention, which is oftentimes when you're looking at, I have this character and I have this character, one of them is probably going to be more of a target than the other. You sit down to Vader Jabba or Vader Raider, you know that Vader is where a lot of the damage is going to come from, so a lot of decks will focus him down first, if they can, and go for whoever his compatriot is later. Similar with Luke Akbar, right? I believe the more correct play is to go for Luke first, and then take down Admiral Akbar, especially with a lot of cards in those decks tend to be spot a blue character, or you can only play this on a blue character. Taking Luke down first is generally the way to go there. If you start to balance how you're putting your upgrades down, you can shift where the damage focus might be, which can work in a couple of ways. You might distract your opponent who is, you know, maybe got one of your characters down to half health, but you're loading something else with upgrades and it becomes a threat. Well, if they start putting damage on the other one that's getting all these upgrades, now they kind of have split focus. They maybe could have finished off the other one, maybe a better choice. And then you can also confound this if you start using redeploys, as we talked about earlier, which is just a whole other interesting element to it. But trying to find ways to take your opponent's focus from one character to another is pretty interesting. You know, when I played Jango Veers, I often went second, and I usually chose to shield up one character. I don't remember which one, but we'll say for the sake of argument it was Veers, and they would go for Jango first, which probably makes sense. He has the activation ability. So after a game or two of that, I started shielding up Jango, and then they would go for Veers. Which is interesting because I still think Jango is the bigger threat to go for, despite the fact that he has the melee face on there because of what he does with activation. But it was interesting, and I said afterwards, you know, you're the first person who went for Jango Fett first. Why is that? Or for General Veers first, rather. Why is that? He says, well, you put the shields on Fett. So that seemed to be dictated by where I was placing shields, which was interesting to me. So there are a lot of ways you can change what your opponent might focus on.
And I would say that whenever you're playing a game, notice what your opponent does that makes you feel like you should attack a character more than a different character. kind of notice what is factoring into your decisions, because chances are you're not the only person that's going to think that way, and you might be able to use that to your advantage. This game, it kind of rewards being tricksy sometimes.
Yeah, they might be trying to bluff you, which is an important thing to consider, especially if the things they're playing down, again, have perhaps a redeploy on them. They might be trying to force your attention to that one, knowing that they're not really going to lose those upgrades if they feel they're vital.
Right, and there's just so many layers to this game. It's I know it's been remarked on before, but it's officially kooky.
It's deceptive. It looks very straightforward, and it is, I think, very straightforward to learn. And I think if you never look deeper than that, you're going to say, well, this game doesn't have a ton of depth. But it's there. It's absolutely there. You have to look harder for it, but it's there. And it's in decisions like those. It's in decisions like, what I do with unpredictable. And there's actually, I have a whole article that's going to be coming out on unpredictable fairly soon as well. But the fact that you get to choose whose die you're rerolling, and then thanks to ambush, you get to take another action. So whose die you reroll and what that reroll comes up then could change completely the flavor of the action that you'll take with the ambush side. And you get these branching decision trees that just go down. And I think that's really fascinating and something that is not evident if you only are looking at how straightforward I take this action, you take this action, and I take it, so forth and so on, is.
And it's very interesting to me that you have a game that has a high level of variance in it, a high chance. And you're going to start seeing the same players kind of rise to the top every event. And that's not because they are just the luckiest people that always get the best rolls. They are not the people that know how to throw their dice a certain way so they always land on the high sides or the special sides. They're the people that are going to be able to learn how to deal with a lot of different situations and are looking at those added layers to the game.
Right. And one thing that this has going for it, I would say, is that it's not just cards, it's not just dice, it's both. So you have options. When my dice were going bad, I had options in my deck to shift that, right? If my cards were bad, there's probably not as much as that I can do with my dice, but I still have dice on the table. And if I'm using two elite characters, four of them, even if I never got to play an upgrade. So there are things there that you can do. Plus, in between rounds, you can discard as much as you want to draw back up. And sometimes that might be the right play if you're really having trouble. Because there are only 30 cards in the deck. And I believe, Oddball, you had a point you wanted to make about that.
I do. As you say, there are only 30 cards in a deck, no more, no less. And that 30-card deck usually only has 20 or fewer different cards in it. What I wanted to do at the beginning is I saw so many good cards, especially whenever I first got my cards and dice, and I could only build teams that had all three colors in them to make my 30 points worth of characters. I wanted to jam as many different cool cards into the deck as I could. And that's just not going to work. You really have to keep in mind, hey, I've got 30 slots, but maybe I am only going to have 18 really, truly different kinds of cards. I'm going to have duplicates of 12 of those.
And duplicates are important. Because of the variance, there are certain cards that are just going to be vital for your win condition, and you need to have those there. If you look at most of the red, yellow villains lists, you're not going to see less than two of most guns, except for the IQA rifle, which as a three cost is kind of the outlier in that deck. You'll generally see just one of it. You're going to see mostly two of those things. If I look at this Luke Akbar deck that we talked about at the top of the show, you have just four one ofs in there. Some of them perhaps because of rarity. I know I only have one of Luke Skywalker's lightsabers rather than two. But some of them just because of prioritizing what's more important, or I want to fit these abilities or these powers in. Do I have to cut some things to fit that in? Is it worth just having one? Things like that. For most things, if you want to have one of them, it's probably worth having two of them. There are, of course, exceptions to that, but you're absolutely right.
Right. In my mind, there are two different reasons to have more than one copy of a card in a deck. One, and this is going to mostly go for events, although I suppose upgrades can be the same, but you're going to want to use that card more than once. Again, events, that's going to be very important. You're going to want to use the, let's say, the Riposte, to go back to that. You're going to want to use it two different times, potentially. So you're going to want to include, of course, two copies of it. On the other side of it, though, you might include two copies of Luke's lightsaber. And even though you can only have one in play at a time, you want to make sure that you're going to have the best chance possible to get to it as quickly as you can. So between those two different reasons, you've got to balance that with having the highest number of different types of cards that you can to actually help your deck win. It's finding that balance that makes deck building so much fun. I'd say deck building's almost more fun than the actual game itself.
You see, that depends on the person. I know that deck building tends to be the less fun part for me. I like more playing, so I will rely a lot on talking with folks, people who I think are good players, looking at the resources to get a deck and then maybe tweak it. And really work with those people and learn it very well, and then go forward. The deck building is generally not a part that I have focused on. I think it's fun. I think it's an interesting exercise, but I tend to look at these games a little more from the actual gameplay perspective, especially the decisions that you're going to make. Those are the things that I love to dig into.
Yeah, this game's a little bit different for me in that I am enjoying the constructed part of it. In previous games that I've played, I've been known more as a on-the-fly, as a draft player. But really, with the lack of draft yet in Destiny, and with all the nice little pieces and corners and everything you have to think around when creating a deck, I do like throwing something together and seeing how it works. And if it doesn't work, that's fine, and I get to learn how to better make my next one. It's part of a thing, like a point 4B on here. One thing that you're going to hear a lot of advice of as a new player or an experienced player is, hey, you should play the same deck every time, or you should always play a different deck. And really, that's just going to fall to your own personal style. Some people have a lot of fun playing the same basic team every time and learning that team so well that they could go through with their eyes closed and tell you exactly every card in it. If you say, hey, how many copies of this card do you have? They know without even referring to anything else, I've got two or I've got one. On the other hand, some players like to go ahead and try to create as many different things as possible. And while they may not be as well-versed in a specific deck that they've put together, they are going to have a bit better general, I think, knowledge of the different combinations in the game.
Yeah, it comes down to preference. And I've seen both sides of it in many different games that I've played.
Yeah, there's no right way, no wrong way.
No. Though the people who are adherents to one strategy or another are going to tell you that their way is right and that other ways are stupid, but that's really generally not the case.
Well, I don't know. The Buckethead way is kind of stupid.
I don't know. I would say the Lazy Rebel Scum way is a lot dumber.
And that's why we're friends.
Apparently.
Do you have any other points that you wanted to make?
No, I think that about covers it. There are so many facets to this, and probably just about any one of these could be extrapolated into an entire episode. And, well, who knows? Perhaps they will as we move forward and dig into some of the abilities a whole lot more. We're also looking forward to bringing you some of those kind of topics in article format, which again, you can find at www.thewealthywampa.com. A lot of things are up right now, and we want to keep that coming to you. We like to think about things, and then sometimes it leads to a great thought and we write it down. Sometimes it fizzles because we realize, oh, what we were thinking didn't make sense because of this rule or this card or whatever else. And sometimes you get partway into writing something and it doesn't work at all. But the thing is the thought process that goes through it, and sometimes we'll discover that something doesn't work, and the fact that it doesn't becomes worth sharing too because of how it helps us understand and know the game better.
Yeah, the most important thing that you can keep in mind as a new player or not a new player is that we're all really new players still. The game's only been out for a few months at the point of the recording of this podcast, and even though some of us have been following it, you know, for a few months before then and salivating over every spoiler that came out, much like we're doing with the new set, but even then, we're all still new players. Nobody has all the answers, and nobody's discovered all of the combos yet. Who knows? There might be a new combo discovered next week that's going to take down every other team. I don't think there'll be anything quite that powerful. But the point stands that we're all new players. Don't feel discouraged whenever you want to go play at a play group or an event or in a bigger tournament. Just jump in there, have fun. There'll be people of your exact skill level there, no matter what that skill level is.
Yeah, where I've gone, everybody's been friendly. Everybody's been chatty, talking back and forth, having a lot of fun while playing, which is pretty great. Those are the kind of games that I prefer. I like to interact with my opponent. I think you see a lot of other games, people sit there very seriously and just kind of stare at the cards and stare at their opponent. And that's fine for certain environments, but especially if I'm playing on my store, I just want to I want to enjoy playing and play well, but part of that is also going to be having a degree of interaction with my opponent. My opponent's interacting a little, we're having fun. Those are the best things, and luckily those have been my experiences so far. I would say early on we have the shapings and makings of a good community, at least locally, and hopefully that's the case wherever you're playing to.
Yeah, hopefully so.
All right then. Well, that brings us to the close of this episode. Original music is by Dave. Thank you to our Imperial announcer at the beginning of the show. That's my commanding officer, Lieutenant Jutsi Herenberg. Since we are located a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, we are not affiliated with Disney, Lucasfilm, or Fantasy Flight Games. For news, articles, and more, check out the website at www.thewealthywampa.com. We will see you in 2 weeks with another episode, and until then, may the Force be with us. Please.